You're listening to Peel Talks Housing, the Region of Peel's podcast delving deep into complex issues around affordable housing and homelessness and efforts to help residents get and keep housing. Episodes will feature residents with lived experience, Region of Peel staff, our partners, academics, policymakers, and other leading voices in the affordable housing sector. The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of the Region of Peel or the direction provided by the Region of Peel's Council. This episode of Peel Talks Housing contains a sensitive subject matter that may not be suitable for all audience members. Viewer and listener discretion is advised.
Hey everybody, my name is Axel Villamil. I'm your host for Peel Talks Housing, and today's topic is about who is precariously housed and homeless in Peel. I'm joined by two amazing guests in our studio. We have Faye Ann McRae, and we also have Janet Dankwa. Happy to have you both here.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Amazing. So I would love if you could both introduce yourselves to everybody that's listening and watching. I'm going to start with you, Faye Ann.
My name is Faye Ann McRae. I work as a law clerk, and I sit on two tables in Peel, the lived poverty experience table and the coordinated access table. I joined the group or part of this group because of past experiences. So I'm happy to be here to partake in this episode.
Then my name is Janet Dankwa. I also have the opportunity to sit on the Peel Lived Experience table, Coordinated Access, and some other groups within Peel Region as well.
Amazing. What are some common challenges people who are precariously housed face? And any of you two can start?
It's a lot that we face out there. I always say homelessness is usually the first one. When you don't have a place, you literally become homelessness. And once you're on the street, you are scared. It's not easy for women, especially, to become homeless. First of all, you might not have that income to support. Poverty is one of them. Mental illness is some of them, and I will let Fain also continue with the rest of it.
For me, I think the first spark would be when you say precariously, it's the uncertainty of life, and that encapsulates so much. Looking at my experience, the pain of not only for myself, but having others or dependents to not know what happens tomorrow or the next day is what I would say that precarious homelessness is. And so the challenge of the uncertainty would be not knowing, as well as who to turn to. Or who can you trust? What can you ask for? And what is available?
Absolutely.
So within all of that is that uncertainty of not knowing where you will be sleeping, even if you have things with you, what happens to those? You have your children with you. What do you say to them? What's happening the next day when they're looking at you and you yourself don't know and you're supposed to be providing for and caring for and, you know, ensuring, and you don't know that?
Absolutely. I mean, I really believe that it's those uncertainties, that especially with something that is such a basic need can be so frightening. And, you know, it also takes the courage to talk about. So I wanted to ask you both as well as, you know, why did you even come here today to be on this podcast? What's the reason that you decided to participate?
I choose to be here today because I want to speak for those without voices to be here today. It's a lot of us. When I say it's a lot of us, it's a lot of residents, both female and women, men, going through this. And not all of them are able to be here. So I am very glad and thankful grateful for the opportunity to speak today on their behalf and to share my lived experience for those that are willing to do something about it, to know that this is real. The things we go through is definitely realistic.
Again, I would add on to Janet's perspective. I'm here today because to add a voice to what the vulnerable experience. My experience has taught me so much that a voice is needed. When I say needed with emphasis, that it's not a choice when you're going through homelessness. That vulnerable state, some may choose to go through that, but from my perspective, I don't see it as being a choice because there are events that happen during this journey of life. And to go through it with not having support is more of a challenge. So I am here to put a voice to it and hopefully make an impact on policies as well as get to the heart of others to understand that it's humanity, number one, that is paramount, to exercise that with others who are going through the similar experience that I've experienced.
Well, I'm glad you both are here, and thank you for, you know, bring the courage to talk about this, especially for the ones who can't speak and, you know, for the ones that don't know and don't understand, for the people that are listening, if they are out there. I would like to talk about what led you both to a challenging housing situation, if we can talk about that, and any of you can start as well.
So my experience that led to housing was domestic violence. And what I said previously that brought me here, it wasn't a choice. It was, for me, life and death. And I prefer to be alive and deal with the challenges than not be. So based on that, I had to make that choice to seek whatever support in terms of housing and whatever else came with that at that time.
When Fain was talking, I was just looking at her eyes. And when she said domestic violence, I just started getting goosebumps. Because then I knew I'm not alone. I did not choose to leave my environment that I grew up just to become an immigrant here in Canada. No, I didn't choose. I wish I had a better plan. I wish I have sat down more and planned. I wish I had somebody to tell me how the journey was going to be. I wish I had somebody who have been through the same journey to say, Janet, maybe it might not be easy, so you might want to just stick with this abuser. But it was the same situation. I left. And I left with my children as well. Didn't know where we're going to go, how we're going to survive, or what, how an immigrant is. As an American citizen, becoming an immigrant in some new country, I didn't know what everything will be like. So yes, I left everything behind and I grabbed my children and I did whatever I have to do to protect them at that point. And so that's how I end up. It wasn't a choice.
I think as much as we try to plan anything in life, it never really works out to what it usually is. And, you know, we all go in different paths and, you know, we're all here today to speak about that journey. So again, I want to thank you both for sharing that, because it's not easy to share such a, you know, sensitive story, especially one to talk about again. I think both of you had both very different and also relatable experiences, you know, with housing situations. And I think, you know, I want to kind of dig deeper from based off of your stories. I'd like to ask if what supports would, you know, you have wanted or would someone need if they are precariously housed?
Like I was saying earlier, I wish that services was provided right away from me in the state. And the help that I needed, and which was moving away from my abuser and having a very good place to stay on my own, getting the mental support that my children and I needed, getting the food that we needed. My ex-husband closed all my account. Not just closing the account. He took the car, which is my car, parked it in another state close by, which is Maryland, when there was a court order telling him not to touch anything, to continue doing everything till the divorce is final. But instead, he parked the car in Maryland, told the police he have sold the car. The police never investigated. They never did anything. So we didn't have ways of transportation. And it was his way of us getting back and me begging him and relying on him again for anything. So my children and I left that home, which is my home, with no food, no access to transportation, and no home to go to. The cops were aware of it. The social services, child protective services were aware of the situation we were going through. But no services was provided to me or my children. It wasn't even offered in the first place.
So was this on your own that you had to...
Exactly. So these are the type of services that we would need as women who just want to get away from whatever abuse it is. Mental health support, housing is one of them. Food, because most of the time, I'm not the only one. Most abusers take away everything. And that's the way of controlling you. And when that services is not available, where are you supposed to go? Where are you and your children supposed to live?
Janet, I empathize with your situation. And thank you for your strength for speaking up. And I can relate to some of it. I'm not going to say my situation or your situation, anyone was better or worse. However, my experience was a bit different. What caused mine was one of my children called the cops based on the altercation that was occurring. And the cop that showed up, and this was in Peel region, made a decision to arrest my ex-husband. And at that time, made the decision to put me on to Peel Victim Services. The agent that I met with, I think shortly after, maybe a day or two after, sat with me, but was able to know what I wanted to say, what I was experiencing, and directed me to all the resources that I needed. The one thing concerning why we're here concerning precarious housing was that the housing would not have been available for a maximum of 24 months, although it was an emergency. So I had to find my own living, which was either at a shelter, friend, family, however I could have find it. And fortunately, thank God, a lady or a few friends took us in, not just myself, but myself and three children. But throughout the time that I stayed with this person, Peel provided via victim services, resources in terms of if I needed food, where to go to. The children needed counseling or needing counseling services, they're provided. So yes, resources are available and it was readily at hand. However, housing was not available. The maximum time was 24 months. Unfortunately for me, within 18 months, I was able to get housing.
Sounds like, you know, to get out of these difficult situations, it's not only, you know, services that have helped, but I'm sure there's people as well. What would you attribute to it? Was it community? Was it faith? Was it, you know, family support, friends, et cetera? What would you both say?
For me, I would say faith is number one. Having that, I don't think I could have survived. And because of that, I saw the work of my Savior that showed up in times when I don't know. I can remember one situation vividly. I didn't have nothing to feed my kids or my children. And the morning I was, you know, just having a moment to pray. And I just went to my email after that, maybe within a few, I would say maybe a half an hour. And the email came to say, come and pick up a box of chicken. So for me, that took me through, even in the pain, the midst of pain, I had my faith to turn to and cry out and talk to God. And I, not that I would see him, but I can see the works of his hands in making provision. So I would say that for me. And obviously, he would use, you know, family or friends, you know, at strategic moment to reach out at the right time, right moment.
Mine was faith as well, and my children. My children just wanted me to be happy. My children, they didn't care where we were sleeping. I remember at one point, a friend gave us a place, and it was a bunk bed. And they were so happy to be there. And I would sleep on the floor, and my little twins, I'll give them the bunk bed. And at night, they would tell me, Mommy, can you sleep with us? And this bed was so small, I couldn't do that. So I said, what about we take turns? So I'll sleep with Natalie today, and then the next day I'll go up to the bump, the second one, and sleep with Nathaniel throughout. And they were so happy. And even when we migrate here to Canada and in the shelter, they were just so happy to be here. And they gave me so much strength to leave and to fight. I don't think if it wasn't them, I would be here in Canada. If it wasn't them, I don't think I will ever meet Faye or anybody here. Everything I did was for them. And I used to say to myself, at least I'm old, I can take it, but they can't. They can't. They can't. I didn't bring them to this world so they can be abused. I can take the abuse, but they didn't sign up for the abuse. They didn't sign up for the beating. They didn't sign up for any other abuse that came with it. And I was going to do anything it takes. And so to me, they were my heroes, and they were the one that pushed me to be here and be the woman that I am today, talking to everybody.
You both are heroes. You really are.
Amazing. I really look up to your strength, and I'm grateful that you're able to speak so candidly. I can relate to that as well, as I have three, a girl and two boys. And I know I've experienced that, because when I felt I couldn't go on anymore, and there are times when thoughts will come to you I know I've had those thoughts. But then there will be one or two of them around and it will pull me back into reality to say, you know, no, you have to go on. So I understand having the three of them depending on me would make you think beyond self and what you want to do and what you don't want to do. So I
thank you. Thank you.
There's nothing I admire more than strong moms who care. You know, I was never in that situation, but something very similar. When we are younger as kids, we definitely see that and we understand when it's bad. And that's why you don't want to bring them in those bad situations. Cause we'll know. But even the good ones that you said, let's take turns sleeping. That's what matters most, right? You're there. You were there. And that's the main thing. You were both there. And you're here now to talk, you know, about all that. I would love to ask you both, what are three words that could describe the experience of being precariously housed / homeless? Three words.
I tend to lean towards the positive, but I can't neglect the negative that is associated with it. So the three positive, I would say, is relationships. That's number one. Second would be resources. And the final one, I would say, that would encapsulate all of that would be empathy or love, one or the other. And then on the negative side, pain, uncertainty, and I want to say mental health, but those thoughts that are associated with that can go the other way. So I'll leave it at that.
I like the way you said the positive and the negative, because at that moment, there's always the positive and the negative. You have the negative that is fear. Fear. Anxiety. Pain. Then you have the only thing pulling you up, which is hope. Hope. And what would your children do? I like when Faye talk about thoughts. Sometimes so many thoughts. It's just coming through your head. Maybe to make it easier. I remember when this, about when the COVID started, I remember another refugee that killed herself. She migrated and she already been struggling already and coming here thinking it was going to be okay. And her mom passed away while she was here. She couldn't go back home because she's a refugee, and how long it take, whether you know your refugee will go through or not, that alone is a mental health. And also fighting her identity. When COVID happened, she took her life and she jumped through a window. And sometimes I ask myself, I'm in the same situation. I'm not better than her. Neither is she better than me. But the situation she's going through. And I remember I would just pick a phone call and make phone calls. Because the thoughts that come through your mind, and I'm in pain and my back is hurting and I can't even get up, and I'm asking myself, is this worth? But then hope. Then Natalie and Nathaniel kicks in. What are they going to do? And it keeps us alive. It kept me alive. It kept me going.
I think hope is such a difficult thing for everybody, because saying it is, it's very easy to say, ah, there's hope, but actually applying and taking hope and using it is the hardest part. So I think you both have done that. You know, you applied it and, you know, you are here because of that reason. So I do want to ask you both something. not here, is if you're able to speak to yourselves at your lowest point when there was no hope, what could you give a piece of advice to yourself when you're in those situations? You now talking to you before.
I remember one time I was at my lowest and I made a phone call. I hope she doesn't mind me mentioning her name, but I call it Alicia. She's part of the Pure Lift Experience coordinator. And I called her and I said to her, I just can't take it anymore. And I remember she said to me, Jenna, you go through all the stuff you go through so that you become a better advocate for others. A lot of people look up to you. So sometimes when I get up, I'm in pain, and I get the phone call telling me my ex-husband have dropped my kids off in the middle of COVID in Africa. And I stand in that mirror and I say to myself, Janet, there are people looking up to you. There are other women who might not have that voice. They are looking up to you. Now you have just a little extra much work to do. Just something a little extra more. And there are other people looking up to you. So you're going to get up. You're going to get dressed. You're going to get online. You're going to buy a phone card. And you're going to make those calls. And you're going to find out where these kids are. And you're going to do everything you can to make sure they are safe. And you're going to go to all this meeting you have scheduled because other women are waiting to hear your voice. And that's what kept me going when I'm in my lowest. Because my voice, there are other people waiting. There are other women waiting who might not be able to do this on their own.
Thank you, Janet.
Thanks.
I definitely look up to you. For me, my lowest moments are usually the moments I cry. And during those moments of crying, I would learn or turn to praying or just talking to myself or talking to God. And with that, it tend to push me to the point to realize that I have a whole lot of people depending on me. So I cannot give up. One of the moments I know of, or I can recall, was one of my children interrupted and said, Mom, are you okay? You're not. I asked a question and answered at the same time and said, it's okay, Mom. I love you. And put a hug, like just hugged me. And I said, you know what? It's okay. Mom will be okay. And I know at that moment, I just have to be okay. I just have to go on.
Thank you, Fayanne. Thank you. I would like to ask from both of you, from your experiences, how do you think our listeners can help? Whether it's people you know, people who are just getting in this situation, how can they help? What can they do?
One of the main thing I find from my experience is the word empathy again. That is the one thing you can help with. I remember the first couple of interactions, I felt like I chose to go through that situation, so you better deal with it. That's how it felt. And with that, I recluse. I just went internally and I just tried to reach out to people who don't know me or didn't know me at the time. So I think one of the main thing people have to is have some love, have some empathy for those that are going through it, because again, it's not by choice. There's an event that happened and I just need to get through that time. So any form of support, not me pointing fingers or having your own perspective, if the person chooses to speak, let them speak. If they don't want to speak, still be a support. I think that is key for me.
Thank you, Fayyan.
Well said. You said it all well. And one thing I want our listeners to know, and even if it's somebody that's also going through this or about to experience this, you are not alone. You are not alone. If I was able to live behind everything I worked for, the country I grew up in, and become an immigrant, a refugee, experience homelessness, and in through the middle of that process, also dealing with my children. And I'm here today. And not only am I just standing, but I've been also able to open my own nonprofit organization that I'm helping other people. I think anyone can do it with the support. We need the support in order to do this. I remember when I first migrated here and I moved into Peel, I met one employment specialist that I wish all caseworkers and everyone is like her, but she was only created just one. Her name is Sherry Getaway, and she was my employment specialist. And most of the work that I've done here in Peel is because of her, because of the work she did with me. Sometimes when you go in to get services, sometimes the way you even dress is stigmatized. Well, you are well-dressed. It looks like you can afford it. Why are you here? But they don't know that I dress so I can still look better and say to myself, Janet, you look good. You're a beautiful woman. You're not giving up. Sherry worked so hard on me. She collaborated with Rosemary and my caseworker at that time, Kayla Punjabi, I think her name was. I will never forget those three. Worked so hard, making sure that I am who I am today. Making sure I use my voice. She will sign me up for stuff. She will make sure I get my medical help that I need. At that time, I had an accident going through anxiety and depression, and also going through divorce and fighting for my children. And she was there, making sure I have money for transportation. And those are the type of workers we need. So if they are listening, if they can hear me, I'm not here because I got up one day and I got here. I'm here because some other people work so hard. There are a bunch of community, I can't even mention all the names, that are helping us to be here. And like she said, the empathy, if the service is there provided for us, the money is not coming out of your pocket. So please make sure some of us are not just battling homelessness. We're dealing with mental health. We're dealing with custody. We have so many legal aspects to deal with on top of the homelessness. So we need the resources. We don't have to, as women, to prostitute to pay for rent. And we don't have to sell. Nobody have to sell themselves to pay for rent. Without housing, we can't have the beginning. even if we have a job, where are we going to go after we get up from work? Go to a shelter? So please, we want them to know this is real. And we need every support. Just be kind to each other. Love each other. Even if it's a can of soup you have, share with one another. It goes a long way. That's all I can say.
Janet, thank you so much. Fan, thank you so much. Thank you for sharing your amazing, everything that you have. That I hope you both know that you two are amazing individuals. And the tenacity, the drive, the hope that you apply. I hope it's only, you know, these stories can be listened by people that need it and they can use it, because you're right. A lot of people look up to you. A lot of people look up to you as well. And that's why this conversation matters.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That wraps up this episode of Peel Talks Housing. I want to thank Janet Dankwa. Please check out her foundation, which is I'm Here Foundation, a non-for-profit, as well as Faye Ann McRae for coming into the studio and sharing their very powerful stories. You can find information on our podcast at peelregion.ca, and you can also join the conversation on the Region of Peel's social media accounts. My name is Axel Villamil, and this is Peel Talks Housing. The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of the Region of Peel or the direction provided by the Region of Peel's Council.